Workers is a program dedicated to exposing exploitation and helping workers who are mistreated, abused, underpaid and facing injustice in their workplace.
Presented by Utu for Workers Union, we're your hosts, Matt McCartan and Izzy Kane.
Kia ora, welcome to One Union on Air, a show dedicated to telling real workers' stories and winning justice. I'm your host, Izzy Kane, and this week's show is a little different than normal because, of course, we are in level 4 lockdown following the recent outbreak of the COVID Delta variant. I've actually pre-recorded the whole show this week, given the uncertainty of logistics at the moment. So, at the time of recording, Auckland and Northland are still at level 4 lockdown, and it's likely to continue for at least a couple of weeks. We at One Union hope you are keeping safe and well, and as per the Government and Ministry of Health's advice, please do keep to your bubbles, and if you're at all feeling unwell or have any of the COVID symptoms, do get tested. Also, when you have the opportunity to, please book your vaccine. As you'll be aware, the vaccination program is really ramping up at the moment, and more and more vaccination centres are opening up. As Auntie Cindy says, the team of 5 million only works if we collectively stick to the rules and governmental health advice and do our part to ensure the safety of our whānau and community. To that end, lockdowns always lead to levels of uncertainty, particularly for workers and workers' rights. So that will be a key focus of today's show. Later on, we'll be revisiting some case stories of real workers for whom we have won justice for, and we'll play some music. But for now, I thought we'd start off by going over what counts as essential service work, if your employer has the right to ask you to work, and what protections you're legally entitled to. By and large, some employers just misunderstand the rules and need to be reminded, but there's always going to be those who blatantly flout the rules, regardless of the safety of their workers or even themselves, really. And this extends to the handling of the wage subsidy, but I am getting ahead of myself. I'll talk about that a bit more in a bit. So the covid19.govt.nz website has a lot of information surrounding who can work in level 4, you know, what businesses can still operate, and the support available to these businesses. By and large, for the most part, society is basically suspended at level 4. Very few businesses are allowed to operate in person. Working from home is, of course, allowed and encouraged, and many have been prepared for this eventuality, particularly considering this, unfortunately, isn't our first rodeo. But of the workers who are, of course, not able to work remotely, you know, what happens to them? Well, firstly, there are essential workers, which we'll talk about now, and then there are the workers from non-essential services and the aid they're entitled to and their rights, which we will talk more about. So for our frontline essential workers, of those businesses who can have workers on the premises and open to customers, the list includes supermarkets, dairies, food banks, pharmacies, licensed trust liquor stores, petrol stations, self-service laundromats, banks, hardware stores only for trade customers, health services, accommodation services, courts or tribunals, social and community-based services to maintain critical well-being or crisis support, emergency services, parliamentary services, of course, public transport, and though these are limited to essential travel only and have specific guidelines in place. So this is the full list available on the COVID-19 GOVT website. And more information about how these operate at level 4 and other levels are likewise available there. Now, this includes the safety precautions and measurements that must be put in place in order to continue operating at level 4. The health and well-being of our essential workers is key. You know, they're most at risk during COVID outbreaks. On that, to customers, please be respectful, be patient. These workers are just trying to do their jobs in extraordinary circumstances, and we owe them everything for allowing us to weather this lockdown and keep the country ticking over and eventually, you know, opening up again. So every workplace that is allowed to remain open over level 4 is subject to health and safety rules. The employer is responsible for enforcing these rules. Some of these include limiting the number of people on site so everyone can stay 2 metres apart, arranging staggered meal breaks and start-finish times, cleaning and disinfecting the workplace regularly, having PPE equipment available for employees to use, and displaying, you know, QR codes. And if you're customer-facing, you must wear a face mask. Everyone has the right to work in a safe environment, and the onus is absolutely on the employer to ensure that this is adhered to and able to be carried out correctly. So the reason I went over each of these essential services is because listeners will have noticed that bars, restaurants and cafes, cinemas, public recreation services and many other customer-facing services besides do not fall under the category of essential services. Now, this is key because your boss cannot make you come into work over the level 4 lockdown period. And sadly, this does have to be emphasised because we've already seen over the past week instances where employers have been trying to make their staff come into work. Now, hospitality, for instance, is a particularly vulnerable sector because, of course, you know, these are some of the businesses most hard hit by lockdown, as services have to be suspended completely under level 4. Under level 3, contactless delivery services are allowed, but as we're not at that level yet, the situation is constantly evolving. I won't speak to the rules under level 3 on the show today. But just last week, it was reported in the news that some employers in the hospitality industry were trying to make their employees come into work and clean or do other work, despite level 4 restrictions having already kicked in. Listeners might recall our interview with Unite Union's Assistant National Secretary Jared Hare a couple of weeks ago, where we discussed the challenges workers face in the hospitality industry in the best of times, in terms of precarious work arrangements and the lack of protection enforced on work sites. And in the pandemic, all of these issues, sadly, they become, you know, compounded. It's crucial that workers know their rights and that employers adhere to the law, you know, more than ever in these extraordinary times. Something that, of course, you know, One Union and indeed the union movement as a whole is dedicated to ensuring. Now, while health and safety is, of course, paramount at the moment, so is pay. I'll use hospitality as a quick example again, as the industry is particularly vulnerable with many workers on casual or part-time contracts, which may not reflect the hours they actually usually work. So in the past, employers paid that which appears on the worker's contract over the lockdown period, as opposed to the hours the employee usually works, and it appears to be happening again. Though it has been argued by unionists that work rosters and therefore normal hours worked should be viewed as a contract in good faith in itself. It is a tricky one, however, and I would encourage any listeners with doubts to free phone us on 0800 368 000 for advice. COVID-19 has really highlighted the need for a more robust workers' rights and protections. A key worker protection which we have seen is the wage subsidy. Of course, it's also, you know, a protection for businesses and employers alike. But for part-time employees working 20 hours or less a week, your business is able to apply and receive $359 a week. And for full-time employees working 20 hours or more, businesses can receive $600 a week for that worker. Currently, this covers the two-week period, though it has been announced that this will be extended for a further 2 weeks. Workers themselves are not able to apply for the subsidy. You know, your employer has to. And when approved, the entire amount gets paid as a lump sum to your employer. You can also check to see if your workplace has received the subsidy. There's an online search tool available on the MSD website at services.workandincome.govt.nz/EPS. Or you can just Google, you know, who has received the wage subsidy in New Zealand and, you know, the relevant web page will appear. So the business also has to have seen a 40% downturn as a result of COVID-19 to be eligible for the subsidy. If you fall under the category of this, these businesses, then it's highly likely your boss will be eligible to apply. It's good to mention here that sole traders are also eligible to apply and are required to do so on their own behalf. So all details can be found on the Work and Income website under the wage subsidy category. And the terms and conditions to which sole traders or employers are subject to are also publicly available on there. Unfortunately, we have seen instances in past lockdowns where employers received the subsidy and did not pay their workers with it. This is illegal. That financial aid is provided by the government for you for workers under the employ of businesses. It cannot be used to cover any of the costs of running the business. So the best rule of thumb to go with in uncertain times is to read through your employment agreement, your contract. Your employer cannot alter your agreement without consent, and they cannot disregard what is written in it. They must also adhere to the Employment Relations Act, the Wages Protection Act, the Holidays Act, and any other relevant legislation or legal rulings beside. This is particularly relevant when it comes to pay that workers are entitled to over the lockdown period. For instance, your employer cannot reduce your wages to 80% of your usual pay, or only pay you the amount of the wage subsidy without first consulting you and agreeing in writing with both parties signing. Employment law is still in force across Level 4. The terms of an employment contract cannot be altered without the written and signed consent of both parties. Again, it does get a bit tricky here. According to employment law experts, employers tend to be shocked that they cannot unilaterally reduce workers' pay. As it stands, case law from the last lockdown, particularly the Employment Relations Authority ruling against the Dove Hospice, supports the view that an employee who could not work because of the lockdown remained entitled to their usual pay unless agreed otherwise. So I'm repeating this because it is crucial for workers to know their rights in these unprecedented times, but also for employers to know, because these are extraordinary circumstances and, you know, most people are just trying to wrap their heads around it all and trying to stay afloat. So, you know, it's likely that many businesses will not be able to continue paying you 100% of your wages. And it's likely that these employers are following the correct process by, you know, informing their employees or altering the agreement with consent. There may also be a clause in your employment contract about the impact of COVID-19 on your work. So do read through your contract carefully. However, there's always going to be employers who are willfully disregarding the law and exploiting, you know, their position of power and exploiting their workers. If you're in doubt about any such clauses or alterations of agreement, or just don't know how to approach your employer about the wage subsidy, please free phone us, One Union, on 0800 368 000, and we can advise you on the best approach for your situation. Now, one of the common issues that workers have come across is employers forcing them to take their annual leave in lieu of payment over lockdown periods. This is also illegal under the Holidays Act. A worker cannot be forced into altering the terms of agreement undertaken when they came under the employ of their current job. Again, we're revisiting that fact a lot. Workers can agree to take annual leave, but they cannot be coerced into it. Everything has to be agreed to in good faith. On that, if you do agree to take annual leave, you do in fact have to be on leave. So your employer cannot attempt to engage you in any services during this period. And the same applies for sick leave. You cannot be forced to take it, but if you do choose to take it, it must be paid and adhered to as per your employment agreement. If for any reason you don't have an employment agreement, please contact us. It's a legal minimum requirement for all workers, and not being provided one is a common form of worker exploitation that we at One Union are, you know, dedicated to eradicating in Aotearoa. And employers cannot just stop paying you for the reasons I've already outlined extensively. They must continue to meet their legal obligations as an employer. There's more information available on the employment.govt.nz website under Leave and Pay Entitlements During COVID-19. Situations vary, as do particular worker circumstances. So what I've shared with you just now is it's a general rule of thumb approach that should be taken under good faith. And for reference, I sourced this information predominantly from the COVID-19.govt website, employment.govt, and the Work and Income website. But again, if you are at all unclear or concerned about your entitlements or anything I've touched upon just now, please feel free to phone us on 0800 368 000. As our listeners will know, the situation is constantly developing and we are living in a time of uncertainty. At the time of recording, the wage subsidy has been available to cover the two-week period dating from the 17th of August, and it has been announced that a further two-week payment period will become available on the 3rd of September. So do be sure to check on that, whether you be an employee and concerned that you're receiving the correct pay you're entitled to, or are self-employed and need to apply for yourself. So I'll be keeping you updated over the coming weeks of the changes we'll be seeing and share with you real workers' stories over the pandemic period. Coming up soon, I'll be playing a discussion recorded pre-lockdown between One Union's National Secretary, Matt McCartan, and Migrant Workers Association President, Anu Colotti, about a case of migrant exploitation, which highlights, you know, the awful plight that too many migrants have found themselves facing. But first, to break things off a little, I'm going to play you a song called I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free by Nina Simone. It's a beautiful song, and I've chosen it as a part of our Song of Struggle segment, where, you know, the show, we explore music throughout the ages, relevant to and indeed they're imbued in the very heart of socially progressive movements. So this song was released in 1967 and is considered one of the cultural touchstones of the American Civil Rights Movement. It sounds like a song about slavery. However, it was actually written to celebrate a march that occurred from Selma to Montgomery in Alabama. Nina Simone performed it on a stage built from coffins that had been donated from black funeral homes. And that same night, Simone met Martin Luther King Jr. for the first time. So there's a lot going on there. So here it is, Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. Was Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. Later on, at the end of the show, we will have another soulful tune to play for you. I guarantee you'll recognise it, and you won't be able to resist, I think, having a little boogie. But for now, I'm going to share a discussion between One Union's National Secretary, Matt McCartan, and Migrant Workers Association President, Anu Colotti, which was recorded pre-lockdown. In it, they discuss a past case of theirs, a victory for the worker, regarding some horrific levels of exploitation that happened up north. So I'll play it for you now.
Good on, everyone. Anu is still in the studio, so thank you, Anu. I sort of grab you and talk about a couple of cases that we worked on and got resolved, but I think they are very instructive stories, and I think they're very useful for our listeners. So I want to talk about the first case, because this was a couple. So I wouldn't mind... We got it resolved. Got a result, I should say. But it's one of those stories that won't be unique... I don't think. I hope it is, but I don't think it is. So let's have a chat about it. This was a young couple. It was a guy who started in Auckland with a company. But take us through his story from what happened in Auckland. Oh, sorry, just for our listeners' sake, I did just say. So this was a story which started in Auckland, moved to a town up north, where essentially the wife was working for nothing, and that this... the husband had to pay his own taxes, although that, and I want people to know that's where employee, that's not the case, and was paying thousands. And then there was threats of violence sort of at the end, and I think that was quite disturbing, and what people should do when that happens. So maybe if you just take us from the start. This is a young guy in Auckland, we're working for a company, so just start from there.
A young migrant worker here by himself came through the usual student visa route, and after that he is on an open work visa, so working for this employer who owns several gas stations and car grooming businesses. So our worker was working there on contract. He is supposed to do 35 hours a week, but he was working easily up to 60 hours. But
when
still,
you say sort of working on contract, he was an employee or was he a contractor?
No, he was an employee, but contracted to work 35
hours. But in fact was working
60 and only getting paid for 35.
Right.
And then when that open work visa comes to an end, the employer says, yes, I can support you, but you need to pay me. So the worker doesn't really have any option. So to
when you say to pay him, what does he mean by that?
So employers who exploit, not only do they pay below the legal minimum wage, they're also charging premiums.
And what was it in this case?
So in this case, subsequently down the line, when the couple asked if they can be supported for their residence visa, they were asked to pay up to $40,000.
Right. So I'm just going to absorb that one, as everyone else who's listening to this will have to have a sit down. So this is less than minimum wage job. Someone had to pay while they had asked him $40,000. So this was someone who started off as a student, worked there. So under the rules at the time, that these are students allowed to work a certain amount of hours. Right?
Yes, while they're studying, they can work 20 hours a week.
Right, 20 hours. But he had a contract for them to work. He had a contract for them to work 35 hours, but was actually doing.
He had finished his studies by that stage.
All right. So it was all legitimate to that point.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
So he was on paper, he was getting paid for 35 hours.
Correct.
But in fact he was working about 60, and that's where the theft was coming in.
That's
so he got
right.
But he was on what they call an open visa.
At that
correct?
Stage.
So,
yes.
But
yes.
At the end of that, they've got to be sponsored by the employer, right? That was after a year.
That's right.
And then they got 2 years at the time of being a student.
Around two years.
Get that 20 hours a week.
Yes,
right?
They can. Yes.
Then they have a year which mm-hmm. they get an open visa.
Yes, they
right?
can.
So he worked for this guy for a year at 35 hours doing a 60-hour week.
That's right.
Then after that, they've got to be sponsored.
Correct, because there is no other way of...
And that's the trouble. Yes. That's where the trouble came
yes.
in, right?
Yes.
So then that's where you came in. The employer said, yeah, you can, I can do that, but you have to come up to $40,000.
That's right. So you go back home to India and got married. And again, this on papers, on his payslips, was paid holiday, part of his annual leave, but he never actually got any payment into his bank account.
So he
was robbed again.
Yeah. Just for listeners, right? It is illegal. All this is illegal, actually. But the annual leave is calculated at 4 weeks per year for 12 months, averages out at 8%. Right, and so when you finish your employer, they've got to have a record of all your accumulated whole holiday pay. So if you've been there for 2 years equals 8 weeks and so on and so on, right? And so he didn't get any of that.
No, he did not.
So when he went, he took leave. So a lot of migrants, say from India or China or another country, when they go home, if they've got annual leave accrued, which is totaled up, that should be paid to them before they leave for offshore for a period of time. Right?
That's right.
And
yeah.
So he got paid nothing.
Yeah, he got paid nothing.
And this won't be unusual for people who are listening to this, right? But that's illegal. I just want everyone to know that, right?
Yeah.
That's your money. So he didn't get paid for the time he was in there.
He He did not, and it just didn't stop there.
But it got worse, didn't it?
It got worse because while he was in India, his parents had already paid a lot of money for his wedding, which is traditional and normal. And then the boss makes a demand that send me around $5,500 so that I can keep paying your tax, your PAYE. Right. So then this worker's parents had to come up with that money too at the same time.
Right. So not only was he not getting paid, that he had to give the boss $5,500 to pay taxes, so-called.
That's correct.
And I'm a bit suspicious of that, because if he wasn't paying them anyway, well, then how does it show up in an IRD? So that makes me suspect there might have been some tax fraud on the part of the employer coming in. Suspicious of that, because if he wasn't paying them anyway, well, then how does it show up in an IRD? So that makes me suspect there might have been some tax fraud on the part of the employer coming in here.
Exactly.
But anyway, the worker had to borrow from the family $5,500. Of course, it's a huge amount of money. Yeah. So he did that because I think the implied threat of that is, you don't pay me the money, I'm going to block you from coming back.
I'll inform Immigration New Zealand and cancel your visa, so
exactly.
You can't return.
So that's the blackmail.
Yeah.
All right, so his family, they lent him the money
and then he returns with his wife, and then both are then transferred to another gas station up north. And the condition there is that, yes, you can both stay here. You don't have to pay any rent because there's a small flat above the gas station. So you guys stay here. But in return, your wife will have to work in the gas station and she will not be paid anything at all.
Right.
So
I'm just absorbing this. So she had the cat in the garage station as well. There was a laundromat around the corner or something as well, wasn't there?
Yes, running that as well. Yeah, there was a laundromat right next door owned by the same person. So they are opening, closing and maintaining and making sure, you know, the soap powder and everything there, helping people who turn up with washing and don't know how to operate the machines. And then there was also a yard where they fill gas bottles.
That's right.
So they were doing that as well. And there was a trailer hire as well attached to the gas station.
It was a two-person job,
yes.
Right? You know, I mean, there was no question. They said, oh, one person, what? A cafe, a petrol station, people filling up LPG, filling up gases, and as well as a laundromat.
Yeah.
That's not one person, can't
and,
do that.
And then you got all the customers who, you know, fill up with petrol, and they're sort of in the inside the shop buying things.
Oh, yes,
so
you've got to
keep an eye on them.
Like local groceries and so on and so on.
Yeah.
As well as, I understand, they had to go into town to buy the stock and do banking and things like that. So it was a two-person
And get rid of rubbish as well. Keep an eye on them.
Like local groceries and so on and so on. As well as, I understand, they had to go into town to buy the stock and do banking and things like that. So it was a two-person
And get rid of rubbish as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It sounded like a three-person job. But they were trapped, really, weren't they?
Yeah, because at this stage, his visa was attached
was
to the employer.
Was linked to that employer.
Right, and then again, the threat is, if you don't do what I ask you to do, I'll get your visa cancelled, and next thing, I'll get you deported.
And so tell me about upstairs, because there's a little story around that, right? So was there some accommodation there as well, a motel or something, or a few rooms they rented?
There were, so because there's other shops that also have little flats upstairs, so the employer owned the whole place, really. So the accommodation upstairs, there's something above the laundromat, another shop that has something else above it, so other people living there.
Oh. It's just worse and worse. This is all news. Okay. It's all coming back a bit.
Yeah.
So he was doing, anyway, he's got all these jobs.
Yeah.
And he's just one wage has been paid.
Yeah, so this employer has got like two for the price of one, basically.
It's two for the price and one for exploitation. He's getting three for one. All right, so they were working long hours. So they were working about 12-hour days. 6 days a week.
Six, seven days,
right?
Yep.
So that, because they close the shop up on Sundays, right? And that's when they could catch up with their...
It was open 7 days. They had another part-timer who would come in and help. And while the part-timer was quite new being trained, they were working almost 7 days.
They're on call.
In the gas station, they're on call.
They weren't having a life. So this is a newly married couple. So they're upstairs and thing, but there's a story about their flat upstairs too, right?
So the flat upstairs is big enough to house, I guess, two couples, you could say. So our couple has one room, and then the other room is reserved for all sorts of people, strangers, contractors, people from the gas station head office, and the employer himself whenever he's visiting.
They wouldn't notice though. They're people just turn up.
Turn up, yeah. They wouldn't get noticed, and they were also expected to feed the visitors,
at their cost. And so they just come and stay with them, and they didn't, you know, and they had builders up there, and they leave all their tools in their place, et cetera, right? So when did it all come to our attention, or to your attention?
So, after a certain time period, our couple had enough.
Right, really.
And then they raised the issue with the employer. And the employer was if you keep going and pay me $40,000, I can support your next visa, which will be a residence visa.
Right.
So our couple was like, we've all done so many extra hours. You can't ask us for more money. We're actually asking to be treated properly.
Because if they'd been paid the wages they were promised, or there's a two-person job, right, there's something like $120,000 or something around there, wasn't it?
Correct.
And that's what they stole from them. And on top of that, they had to pay money to them as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is just disgusting.
So when a worker raises the issue, then soon after that he is transferred back to Auckland gas station, which is actually unlawful because his visa was tied to the gas station up north.
But I think because the couple had enough at that point.
So
they were just almost, it was partly a bit of relief, right? Just leave it, isolated up in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So come back to Auckland, they were promised a promotion and a job down in Auckland, right?
Yeah. So even their journey down to Auckland was quite stressful. They are given this really rusty old van by the employer to drive all their stuff down, and the van keeps by the employer to drive all their stuff down, and the van keeps breaking down, so they deal with it and then do the best they can, bring it back to where it belongs, and then the van belongs to a family member of the employer, so that family member gets really abusive towards our
couple. To kill him.
He basically said, fix it or I'll kill you.
I'll hunt you down, etc. They're terrified, right?
Yeah.
And they go into hiding.
Yeah.
Because they're so frightened. And then the employer, there is no job.
There is no job, yeah. So
just pretend. Bring them back to Auckland and then just disband them, and just desert them.
So our couple stays with friends for a few days and then follows up. The husband follows up, you know, where is my job that you promised?
Mm.
And, like, you're right, there is no job.
There's no job.
And then the couple comes to us at that stage because they finally realise, like, you know, we've been, there's nothing here.
They've been duped. They've been just outraged. So we got involved and you and I did a little work on this together so that the story is outrageous. And, of course, the employer just lies about the whole thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Butter wooden belt in their mouth and et cetera, et cetera. At least their lawyer couldn't keep a straight face.
You
know, when I look him in the eye, he couldn't tell lies and look at me. So the couple, so what happened there? The couple were so traumatised and they were going to go to Canada
going to move to Canada. So for that,
I just want to say to people listening, right?
Yeah.
This country, this way that we treat other human beings, invite them into our country to hope to build a better life, they get exploited and bullied and robbed to the point they have to go to another country. Mm-hmm. And I just want that to sink in to the people who listen to this, you know, what our country has become. And we let these exploiters just get away with this sort of stuff. But so what happened? So how do we finish the story off?
So I believe they have moved out of New Zealand. I'm not sure exactly which country, whether it was Canada or another.
Australia.
But I know they might have been Australia because...
It was any country but New Zealand,
yes.
Right? They came here with great plans.
Yeah.
And then the way they were treated by people in this country, the exploiters, but also the system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, who do they turn to? How do they get help?
Yeah.
So they, but we got a financial settlement.
Yes, we did.
For them. They got them some money back.
Some, yeah.
Not as much as I would have liked. I don't remember the number now, but they were happy with it.
I think they were okay. Yeah, it wasn't the full that was owed to them, but it was better than nothing.
It was in the tens of thousands, right? And so at least they were able to get some tens of thousands, right? And so at least they were able to get some step. Well, Anu, is there anything else that our listeners need to know about this terrible story?
So I guess it's probably easy for us to say that, you know, make sure, guys, you don't put yourself in this kind of situation. But like you said, the system is kind of designed for people's business models to be based on exploitation. So I think part of the message here too is that, you know, until and unless we change our system to actually look after our workers, this unfortunately will keep repeating.
Well, I think there is some hope, though, and I want to sort of, before we go and cut our wrists, these stories are around, some of it's got worse in some areas, and, you know, the bureaucracies or the state agencies have been stepping up a bit in recent times with the change of government, or this government's been around for 4 years now, and so it takes a bit of while, but look, on the first attempt against them, they will be able to get help, that they will get emergency visas, which will be open of those who are in exploitation.
Yep.
So I just want to encourage people who are listening to this, and when you get too depressed, don't be, because people know this is going on. We're going to crack down on it. So give us a call on 0800 368 000, and we'll help you. But I think what the changes will be is that people can get out of this situation and get an open visa for 6 months.
That's right.
And that gives them time to get out of the situation and get some work. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that change. Mm-hmm. But I encourage people to give us a call. These things are illegal, that there's more of a commitment by the bureaucracies to crack down on the exploiters, mm-hmm. not blame the exploited. So I'm hopeful, very hopeful about the future, and hopefully these cases become unusual as opposed to the norm. So thank you, Anu, for coming on and sharing that story. I think it's very helpful for all of us who listen to it, and these are real stories, and the more we talk about them, the better we'll be, because we'll have changes, and changes are coming.
That was incredible. Real stories. I got cut off there slightly. This story that we just listened to, it's so, so relevant. So while there has indeed been moves to make systemic change in the Labour Inspectorate and MBIE culture in general towards exploited migrant workers, notably by putting the blame on the exploiter, not the exploited, we still have migrant workers being exploited in precarious visa situations, which we have discussed at length before on the show. And the vulnerability has been made so much worse by the uncertainty of COVID lockdowns. If you yourself are a migrant worker and are in need of help, you can contact the Migrant Workers Association at help@migrantworkers.org.nz. And as Matt mentioned, you can, of course, contact One Union on 0800 368 000. Next week, we'll talk more about the realities facing migrant workers during lockdown. But for now, we're going to go on another journey into a past case. Another migrant exploitation case, and indeed the case which sparked the formation of One Union and kind of inspired our kaupapa of winning justice for all workers in New Zealand and ending entrenched endemic exploitation. This is never at the cost of the worker, though. So all that we do at One Union is to ensure the safety and best interests of workers who come to us. So to us, they're the kings on the chessboard who must be protected at all costs. They're not the pawns. So one of the reasons we do share these stories is so workers feel heard and know that as a collective, no worker has to be alone or is alone. So on collectivism, you absolutely can join as a member of One Union. We are open to employees, subcontractors, self-employed, those not in paid work. We have supported membership available. Details can be found on our website, oneunion.org.nz, and memberships start for as little as $5 a month. So that's not much at all. So if you have a case of your own or know someone who does, there's an easy-to-use case assessment form also located on the website, which you can fill out and have sent straight to Matt, our lead advocate. So this next discussion, again recorded pre-lockdown, was between myself and Matt about a chain of bottle stores across the North Island involving a rogue employment advocate, hundreds and thousands of dollars owing, some trapped workers.
Indeed it was. And, yeah. That's right. This is a case, Izzy, this is one of the cases which I fell into by accident, really, and it's moved me so much. I thought, you know, we have to do something about it. So that's partly why we've set this project up we're doing now. So this happened about 3 years ago now. Now, we solved it and got justice for these workers as much as you ever do, but that kind of motivated me. We need to do more of this. So this is where it's led me to the work we're doing now. So this was a... it was like most New Zealanders, and even people who know about this would be shocked. But I was shocked, still am actually. This was 8 workers who worked for this one company over a number of bottle stores in the central North Island. They were all lived in the same house, which is owned by the employer in a small town. And every morning, the manager would turn up in his van, pick them all up early in the morning, and drive them around the centre in the beginning of the day to go and open up the bottle stores, and then drive around at night and pick them up. So that then meant that they were working. It was very clear the hours they were working because they weren't getting picked up until late at night.
That sounds like slavery to me. Is that too contentious to say? Because I think that sounds like slavery.
I am breathing, trying to be...
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But worse, well, not worse than that, but so they were working, it was clear they were working 10 hours a day because they were single people in the stores all day by themselves. Gosh. Therefore, their places had to be open the whole time. They couldn't leave.
No breaks, no nothing.
Right? So that was it. It was clear as clear. Of course, you know, the exploit didn't write it all and just got lawyers and pretending, you know, it was all not true. But it was. But what we've become more sophisticated now, because we got trackers of people's cell phones. It would have made it a lot easier because, you know, yes, everyone knows when they're there. But anyway, in the end, it was proven. What was the most disturbing thing about this was that when after 3 years of this, they just had enough and they quit the job. Basically, they went and got themselves what they call an employment ad. I suppose in one sense, we are too. But a lot of these sort of cowboys, really, you know, work from home. So I just say that anyone who's listening to this and ever get into trouble and go to an employment advocate, because a lot of people can't afford a lawyer, right? If a lawyer's charging less than $300 an hour, they're probably no good, to be honest. So what these advocates do, they've got no formal training, and they work from home or, you know, from the back of their car. And he then said to them, look, oh, this is outrageous. You can get $400,000. So he got them to sign up on that basis. All to pay $2,000. They didn't have it, but anyway, they borrowed it from others and they got the money. So he got their money. Then he went and met with the boss and agreed with the boss to pay the workers $10,000 anyway. They borrowed it from others and they got the money. So he got their money. Then he went and met with the boss and agreed with the boss to pay the workers $10,000 each, which wasn't, for half of them, it was less than their holiday pay.
No.
Now, on top of that, they had to pay him another $2,000. So that means they would have got $6,000 back and paid him $4,000 each. Right? So he would have walked away with $30,000.
When he claimed he could get $400,000.
And that's the lie, right? And I've come across a lot of these cowboys who tell the worker some fantastic numbers. And the workers think, oh, well, it must be true. And they're so excited they're going to get real justice. Just not true. Then they go and see the boss behind their back and then go and do some sweet idea and then come back, oh, I can't get that, you know, well, you didn't tell us the full truth, and they make up stories, right? So that's how the rackets work.
So they're exploited through their exploitation.
Twice.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what you've got is you've got these parasites. Mm. Who go and they go and do a sweetheart deal with the boss because they ain't going to get paid, you see. Then they go back to the worker and then say, oh, look, I couldn't get you the deal, you know. And then they make up excuses. See, they blame the worker. They said, oh, you didn't tell me this, you didn't tell me that. Oh, you know, they find something to say. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no records of that. The evidence wouldn't stand up in court. So that's how they do it. And so this guy thinks these workers were so upset. So one of the strong kids right from the start, when I say kids, they're in their 20s, they're just young men, he approached us through somebody, a recommendation, and he, credit to him, tough, you know, just tough, and he wanted justice.
Mm.
So we went and met with him and that, and I agreed to take the case on. And in the end, we got about, I think we got collectively, it was about $200,000 in all, and these workers got, you know, between, I think, about 20 and 80,000 or something each, 60-odd thousand. So, you know, it was a worse project to do, but what it taught me then is that when workers who are vulnerable need help, if they can't afford a lawyer, which they can't, then there's nothing. And
that's one of the reasons why we formed.
That is one of the key reasons that we formed. And I think we settled this case, which I'm pleased to say. But fortunately, it's confidential. That's part of how the system works, unfortunately. And so we can't name the employer now. But I better not come across him again, because if I've ever heard he does it again, I'll have him.
Well, it's ridiculous that justice should cost that much money.
Oh, it's just... See, these kids, which I forgot to mention, it's going back a little while now, they had gone to the Labor Department.
Oh.
They'd gone.
Oh.
And they had been waiting around for almost a year. Nothing had happened. It came a year in the end. It was less than that. When I phoned up the Labor Inspector, I said, look, one revealed to me as well.
Yeah, our system and also capacity.
Well, it's also true that we're better.
True.
Right?
So
I've come to a view now is that we're quicker and faster. See, what people misunderstand about the Labor Inspectors, they aren't there to represent the worker, right? They are there representing the law.
Yeah.
So their thing is not to get the worker their money back, although they will if it's the minimum wage, but anything more than that they don't do, and they don't do for unfair dismissals, they don't do anything like that. What they do is they fine the employer for breaches of the law. So we try and work with them, but if workers want to get justice, they'll get the law in the state. They won't get their own compensation, because that's not the state's job.
Right, and we're all about justice at Uzu.
Yeah, that's what drives absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, that brings us up to almost the end of today's show. Don't go anywhere, though, because this next song is a lot of fun. It's Move On Up by Curtis Mayfield. Released in 1970 and recognisable through countless movies and TV soundtracks, though interestingly, when it was released, it didn't actually make the charts in the US, and it was only a minor hit in the UK. It was written, composed, and performed by Mayfield after he left The Impressions, another band with hits relevant to the civil rights movement. The song's message is one of hope and inspiration for better times ahead. It's also then relevant to the lockdown we're in at the moment, so I hope it puts a smile on your face. From all of us at One Union, thank you for listening today. I've been your host, Izzy Kane. Check out our website, oneunion.org.nz, and remember, you can always free phone us on 0800 368 000. Until next week, here is Curtis Mayfield's Move On Up. So hush not, child.